Those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the voice behind the show for actors who are heard but not seen. And this week on the phone, we have a very special guest, and I'm going to try to keep my geek to a bare minimum, just enough to get some brief questions out. I'm talking with Larry Kinney. Larry, on the phone, Larry, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Evan. How are you?
I am good, and I'm extremely excited to talk to you because you are one of my favorite kinds of guests to talk to.
What kind is that?
Well, you know, a lot of people know you as the voice of Lion-O from Thundercats.
Yeah.
Which we'll definitely talk about. But as we're doing research for the show and all that, we're finding that you've done a lot of things that I just frankly didn't realize.
Yeah, well, I've been at it 50 years. In August, it'll be 50 years.
Wow.
So, if you stay around long enough, they say you're bound to build a collection, a body of work, as we call it, and we actors refer to it as a body of work.
Yes,
it's just all the junk you've done is what it really is.
And you actually started in radio.
I did. I was 15 years old, and I'm from a small town in Illinois called Pekin, right in the middle of Illinois. And I started my career at a radio station across the river in a little larger town called Peoria. Most people have probably heard that. I got a job as a disc jockey, and so I was doing that. Now, we're talking 1963. Sounds like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It does.
It was. Yeah, I was there playing, the Beatles and the Rodettes and things like that.
Back when they were new.
And they were just coming. They were brand new. That's right. That's right. So that's how I got started. And I'd always been kind of a class clown, believe it or not, in school. You know, I always joke that I remember so many teachers and principals and authority figures through my school careers saying at various times, Larry, I hope when you grow up you find a way to make a decent living with your little voices and jokes. I did.
So in the 60s, you started on the radio as a teenager. In the 70s, that's when you got involved with Don Imus?
Yeah. I was still a disc jockey. By that time, I was working. I had moved from Peoria to Fort Wayne, Indiana, to Cleveland, Chicago. And while I was in Chicago, I started working with Don Imus of the Imus in the Morning program on the telephone. He and I had worked at the same time in Cleveland. I was an afternoon disc jockey at one station. He was a morning disc jockey at another station in town. We never met, but he left there to come to New York, and I left Cleveland a little later to go to Chicago to a radio station. Anyway, Don had apparently been listening to my show in Cleveland, and he called me one day and said, now that we're not in competition in Cleveland, would you like to do some stuff on my show? He said, I'll pay you $50 a day. I said, sure. That's a lot of money back in, this was 73, I think. And so what happened for a whole year, I would be doing my radio show in Chicago, and he'd be doing his morning show in New York. And by the time I was in Chicago, I was doing a morning show at the same time he was. So he would call me during the newscast when we both had the same news on at the same time, and he would say, okay, let's do Richard Nixon today, and here's the topic, and then we would just ad lib a 2 or 3 minute routine, and that went on for a year, and then finally I got a job in New York and came out here so we could do it and see each other while we were doing it, and I was with him for 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was some of your favorite characters do? I mean, you've done dozens, if not hundreds, of different characters over the years on that show. What were some of your favorites?
Well, the first one I ever did for him was Richard Nixon, and I always liked doing Nixon anyway. So I think the first thing I ever said on his show was, he introduced me on the phone again, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. and he had a jingle, you know, I'm a sin in the morning. So, so the first thing I ever said on his show was like, he said, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, and I said, I'm a sin in the morning. That became a kind of a catchphrase for it. So I've always enjoyed doing Nixon. I like, after we moved to TV, and we were on, his show was on radio only from 73 till about 86. And then showing the, it was still a radio show, but they started broadcasting it live on MSNBC. So once we did that, I came up with some new characters. I had to wear makeup and costumes and everything. And my favorite on TV, I think, was always General George Patton. And he would say things like, we have a nuclear capability. The people over there in the Middle East say they want a nuclear capability. I'd say, by God, let's give them one. So I did him, and I did, for years, I did Reverend Jerry Falwell, Senator Ted Kennedy, and people like that.
Now, fast forward to 86. You get the job as the main character in Thundercats.
Yeah, it was actually 83.
Okay. So pretty much every 10 years, you have a big milestone.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, Evan, but you're right. I think I'm a little overdue, though. It's been more than 10 years.
Well, who knows?
We actually started recording Thundercats in late 83. And, you know, it takes a while to do animated shows, so it didn't go on the air until early 85. But, yeah, that's when we started. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. You and you became kind of attached, I guess, to kind of what became the Rankin Bass kind of repertory. Yourself, Earl Hammond. There was another Earl in there, and whose name is escaping me.
Earl Hyman.
That's right.
Earl Hyman.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that Earl Hyman, who was Panthro in Thundercats, and then also like the rest of us on Thundercats, the rest of the same cast pretty much did the other series called Silverhawks and Tiger Sharks. But some people don't realize Earl Hyman played Bill Cosby's father on The Cosby Show.
That's right. That's right.
I know it's right. I was
well,
there.
Of course, you know that's right. What was that like to do all of those shows? I mean, Thundercats ran from about 86 to about 89 or so, and Silverhawks was another season. And between the two, you did about 200 episodes in about 4 years.
Yeah, we did 130 Thundercats. We did 65 Silverhawks. And then we did Tiger Sharks. By that time, the writers had pretty much run out of ideas, so we only did about, I don't know, maybe 26 or 30 of those. But then the same group of us also went on to do several Rankin Bass holiday animation specials. We did one called A Star for Jeremy. A lot of them still run every Christmas time. A Star for Jeremy, The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus, 12 Days of Christmas. And the interesting thing is, when I first got the call to audition for Rankin Bass, I was excited because I grew up watching Rankin Bass animated Christmas specials like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer with Fred Astaire and Frosty the Snowman with Burl Ives, you know. So it was exciting to work for them. And then after we did the series, I was especially glad I was able to do some, you know, Christmas specials for Rankin Bass.
Can you talk a little bit about the recording sessions for Thundercats? I remember, I believe the Thundercats were the first show that anyone knew about where there was a blooper reel that floated around the internet in the very early days. And it was clear you guys were having a ton of fun, and you were all in the same room, which is just kind of weird nowadays, but back then it was a little more common.
It's almost non-existent now, you're right, but back then, the entire cast, which was only about five or six of us, that cast did almost every voice in all 130 episodes. And it was the most fun I've ever had in my career doing that. Not just Thundercats, but working with that same group of people for all those things I told you about, we became, well, first of all, they were some of the most talented people I had ever met and worked with, and every one of them so had such a great sense of humor. We just worked well together. We were like a family almost. In fact, for years after we recorded those, we'd all get together, you know, at holiday time or whatever, because we enjoyed each other's company so much. And that's a little bit rare in show business, you know. And so that shows how special it was. I just remember it as being more fun than anything I've ever done, I think.
Now, and that takes us to about 93 or so. And then you kind of drop off the radar as far as I guess you could say, you know, television shows work happened. But you, at that point, you were already doing Count Chocula and Sonny from Cocoa Puffs, correct?
Yeah, right. I started doing Count Chocula in, I think, 1978. I've been with him for 35 years. And then about a year later, I started doing Sonny Cocoa Puffs. So I've been doing those a long time, too.
And you're still doing them?
Still doing both of them, yeah. Although we don't do new commercials anymore for Count Chocula. It's just internet stuff. They have a website. General Mills has a website, the interactive thing for kids, but they don't. We don't do commercials for him anymore, for that cereal anymore. But yeah, I still do. In fact, we did a new Cocoa Puffs commercial the other day.
How? This may be a silly question, but having done, you know, a character like, you know, Count Chocula for 35 years, has the character changed much? And have you had a chance to kind of mold him in a particular way, or is it you pretty similar to how he was?
You know, you're right. That is a silly question. No, it's not. It's a very good question, and one I've never been asked, which is the mark of a good interviewer. I congratulate you on that, because I've been asked a lot of questions in my life by interviewers. No, actually, I think that I've never really had a conversation about this with you know, the people that I were the added agency and the General Mills people. But I, first of all, to directly answer your question, no, the characters haven't changed at all, really. And I think that's part of the idea of having a mascot like that is that it stays the same, it stays recognizable. So that, you know, so that, I guess, like if you're a parent, you used to eat Cocoa Puffs yourself when you were a kid, or at least you remember the commercials on TV, it still sounds the same today. And again, I've never discussed that, but you made me think about that. I'm gonna get you back for that.
And, you know, you were working, you know, like I said, late 80s, kind of the heyday for really high quality animation, especially, you know, Saturday morning after school kind of animation.
Yeah.
And you're also at the same time doing Count Chocula and all of these characters. How is it possible, given how many thousands of animated shows were being produced around that time, that there wasn't a General Mills mascot show?
I don't know. I think, you know, today they probably would think about something like that, but it just wasn't in the in anybody's scope of thought back then. It would have been a good idea, wouldn't it, to just make like a little Saturday morning comedy cartoon series with all those characters together. But you know what? You know what? Now that I think about it, and again, it's a question I've never been asked. Back about that time, I don't know if it was the mid-80s or late, I think it was late 70s, there began a movement in this country. Some woman, I forget her name, started this group to begin protesting and trying to change the commercials on television and the animated shows on TV that were aimed at kids. I wish I could remember the name of it. It's still active today. It's like a watchdog group. She felt, they felt at the time, and I think they were right, that too many of the kids' shows were violent and didn't espouse, you know, the right code of ethics or whatever that they should be using TV to do with kids. It's one of the reasons that Thundercats became a TV show. Rankin Bass wanted to counter that, or wanted to put out a show that kind of adhered to what those people were saying. That didn't have a lot of violence. I mean, we had fights, you know, between the Thundercats and the mutants, but the main thrust of the show was, of course, the code of Thundera was truth, honor, justice, loyalty. I probably have forgotten one of them, but and the first, if you remember, or if you're watching now, whenever there's trouble, like between Mumra and Lionel, or the first thing that the Thundercats try to do is talk it out. You know what I mean? The last thing they resort to is violence. So anyway, I'm really rambling and digressing here. What was the question?
I don't even remember, but you know what? That's the kind of show it is.
That trick works. It works every time.
It does. Now, you know, fast forward about 10 years ago now, you are doing, you know, in the last few years, you've done Family Guy. You kind of resurrected the Lion-O character for one of the Family Guy movies.
And speaking
of, you know, the code of ethics, you've mentioned that before about how you've talked about how you felt that some shows maybe kind of pushing the limits as far as for a kids audience. How do you go from that to doing Family Guy?
Well, that's an interesting story because I had been watching Family Guy. I think it's a brilliant show. I think Seth MacFarlane is a genius. And I remember it was one of the first shows that I started checking out that really shocked me by its content. You know, I mean, you know, here we were back in the mid-'80s doing Thundercats and those kinds of things that where we would never have said the words and had the plot lines and situations that they have today. Of course, it's a different thing. We were doing a show aimed at children, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it was broadcast on certain times that the kids watch. But my point was that I had seen a few of the shows, and while I thought they were brilliant, when I got the call from my agent saying that, from Seth MacFarlane, saying that they'd like, would I be interested in doing Lion-O's voice and everything, I said, absolutely not. And I told my agent what I just told you. I love the show and everything, but I'm very protective of the legacy of Thundercats and of Lion-O. The main reason for that is over the years I received emails, and before there were emails, letters from and met people who are now grown or whatever, and have told me in various degrees of specifics that their childhoods were not that great. And you know, probably understand what that meant. I assume they knew what they were talking about. And they said, my house was really a bad place to be. But when I was able to go into my room and watch Thundercats for a half hour, it took me away from all that. And I've also had people who've told me that they think that they're part of their code of, that their morality, what they try to live by, was instilled in them by the show Thundercats. So that means a lot to me to have been part of that, a show that means much more to some people than just entertainment. I mean, that's important to me, too. But I know that the show, and when I go to Comic-Cons and toy expos and things that I just did in Toronto this last weekend, inevitably, at least a few people tell me that during our discussions, that they thank me for being a part of their childhood and for helping them get through some rough times. So, that long story was just to tell you that when I got the call about would you be interested in doing a Family Guy thing, I said, you know what, I don't think so because I know the show, and again, I love it, I think it's funny, but I don't, they said, well, at least read the script. So I read the script, and I said, definitely not. Then my son, Tanner, who at the time was, I don't know, 19, 20 years old, he said, Dad, you got to do it. It's the hip show. It's like The Simpsons. Big stars are asking to be on it, you know. And he said, the thing about the language and all that, keep in mind, you're not doing Thundercats for kids. This is an adult-oriented show. It's on late at night and all that. And people realize that, yeah, it's vulgar and dirty, but it's in a funny way. It's not just to be crass. It's what we used to call blue, but it's intelligent blue, mm-hmm. if you don't understand. So I said, well, you know, I said, I think he's right. Yeah, he is right. I'll do it. And then I held my breath for about a week after, hoping that, worrying that I was going to get hate mail, Thundercats fans. But all I got was, well, that was funny, Mr. Kenny. You know, it was great. So I got lucky.
Very nice. You know, and since then, you've been doing, you were a part of the short-lived Thundercats reboot.
Yeah. They Warner Brothers, who now owns the rights to it, asked me to do the part of Claudius, Lion-O's father. I thought that was great because it was an homage not just to me, certainly, but to the original show itself and to the fans of the original show. It showed that they wanted to keep some continuity, you know, between the original show and the new one. And I think they did. I thought it was done very, very well. And I think the whole the show the new show, that is, which was true to the original show in that they had the co-defender and all of that, the storylines, the plots. Of course, they changed it. Why bring back an old show that's exactly the same, you know? Mm-hmm. But I thought they did a wonderful job with it. I'm sad to see that it got canceled.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. I wanted to see it. Unfortunately, I don't have cable, so I have to find other means of tracking it down.
Where are you? Where are you?
Well, I'm in Minneapolis. I mean, we have cable here. I just don't
have
it.
Oh, that's right. You don't have electricity up there in Minnesota, do you?
Well, yeah, only when it's above freezing. So sometime in the next few weeks, we should get it back.
I'm only joking. seriously, because have very fond memories of Minnesota. I'm one of those families from Illinois, and you guys, I know, ask your parents. I don't know if it's the same now, but every working blue-collar family from Illinois spends their two-week summer vacation fishing in Minnesota.
Oh, yes. It's pretty much the same here.
I have fond memories of Deer Lake Resort up around Brainerd, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yep. I've got family up around Brainerd.
Matter of fact, my oldest daughter, Carrie, I don't know if you're aware of, her name is Carrie Kenny Silver.
Yeah, she's on Reno 911 now, and actually she was on The State, which you did some voiceovers for when that was on.
Well, you've done your homework, that's right, yeah. Well, she was, I had always told her about, our family vacations when I was a kid up in Minnesota, and our whole family would go, I mean, four or five aunts and uncles and cousins and friends and neighbors. We would rent the entire resort, wasn't it big, maybe 10 cabins. And we'd all be up there together for 2 weeks. She'd always heard about it. And when she was about 13 or 14 years old, we had the opportunity. I was going to go back I hadn't been up there for 20 years. And so I was going to go back and go up with my family again. And she was able to go with us. Well, to this day, now Carrie's been all over the world, too. You know, I mean, she vacations in Bali and, stuff like that. And she tells people to this day her favorite vacation ever was 2 weeks in Minnesota.
Nice. Well, now that I have that clip, I'll send that to the tourism board.
Good. And then you'll have to send Carrie a check for $10,000.
Oh, I will, of course. Obviously.
No, it's a true story.
You started to dabble a little
bit
in video.
You know what?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, Evan, I'm so sorry. You know what? Maybe that was Wisconsin.
Oh, see, now that, I can end this interview anytime, Larry.
Yeah, I know it was Minnesota because I remember every year we had to make a trip to the state fair up there, and we had to go see the big Paul Bunyan.
Oh, absolutely. That's right.
Yeah.
It's right in Brainerd there. So, you've proven the provenance of that story. So,
sure, as you folks say back there, it's up Brainerd.
It's up Brainerd. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
You started to dabble a little bit into video games. You did Grand Theft Auto 4. You were one of the radio people.
Right.
You were in Alan Wake as well.
Alan Wake, yeah. The radio guy on that one, too.
Do you have any video game credits coming up that people would know about?
I talked to a guy in Toronto just this 2 days ago about a project he's working on that. He tells me there's a new trend now amongst people who are producing this type of thing, that he is working on a project that will be hopefully an animated series and a game, a video game.
Oh, nice.
I guess that's a new idea.
Nice.
And so we're talking about that, but nothing is final about that yet.
Nice.
Other than that, I did Mafia 2 a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it, three or four so far. I'm sorry, I keep clearing my throat. I had a Skittles session today. I'm the announcer on the Skittles commercial.
Oh, that's right.
And it's the same voice I use. It's a raspy-sounding voice. And yesterday, I'm also the announcer on Best Week Ever on VH1.
Oh, is that still going?
And
I thought that ended a few years ago.
No, we just brought it back 10 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. All right.
So if you'll recall... If you recall, it's a rather intense voice. It goes like this.
It's the third week of April 2013, the best week ever!
So I streamed for 2 hours yesterday for that, and I used the same voice for Skittles.
Feel the rainbow, taste the rainbow.
So I'm a little raspy tonight.
Wow, you were all over the place.
Well, you know, you got to eat.
You were just in, you mentioned a couple of times that you were just in Toronto. Do you get a chance to do much conventions?
Oh, yeah, I've been doing a lot of them. It's another thing my son talked me into doing 7 or 8 years ago. I had never heard of Comic-Cons, you know. And he's, you know, at the time he was, you know, 19, 20, so he knows everything, you know. And he said we should check that out. So he went with me to my first one. It was in New Jersey. It was only a couple hours from my house. And I thought, this is great. You know, I like this. So now I do, as I said, I was at the, it wasn't called Comic-Con in Toronto. It was called the 80s Toy Expo. In Miami, I'm going down to the Florida Supercon for about my fourth year in July. I think in September, I'm going to Los Angeles. In January, I'm working on, it's not finalized yet, but I may go to Wales for the Wales Comic-Con.
Nice.
Yeah, it's gone global.
Excellent.
And it's great because I go to these big cities, Atlanta. I've been to Atlanta a couple of times. And I got to the point where I think, you know, when people call me and write me and ask me, would you come to our Comic-Con, I decided, well, I'm going to go to places that I've never been. This is a good chance for me to go see places. So I got a call a few years ago from a guy in Jackson, Mississippi. And I thought, I've never been to Mississippi. I've never been to the Deep South. So by golly, I'm going to do it. And I went down there, and it was great fun. Except that for 2 weeks after I came home, I was saying, how y'all doing, you know? y'all going or just y'all? I really like it. It's so great to, you know, to finally get a chance to meet the fans of the various things that I do. You know, in the past, sometimes you get an email from somebody that says, I'm a big fan of your voices, or thank you for doing Thundercats. And now I get a chance to meet them, you know, and it's really great. I really enjoy them.
Now, you are on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Have you gotten into the Twitter yet?
No, I didn't. I think I do have a Twitter page or something, but I've never gone to it. I don't know, when I did that, it's a different thing, you know, it's kind of a quick little, you know, one-liner things and all that. And I spend a lot of time on Facebook because I feel it's only right if people have asked me to befriend, you know, to friend them, and I do, and I've got like 1,800 friends now. Every night I sit down and wish happy birthday to everybody whose birthday is on my friend list. And anytime I see somebody has tagged me in something, I go to it and, you know, hit the like button and stuff like that. And it's fun too. It's beginning to get a little time consuming, but what the heck? If people want to reach out to me and say, you know, I like your work and thank you, least I can do is to respond to them. You know, I wish more people in our business would do that.
Well, Larry, it was great talking to you. I have so many more questions, but you've got to go. And you're, like I said, you're a very busy man.
Can we do it again sometime?
Absolutely. We'll find some time.
I'd like to because, you know, I wasn't just blowing smoke at you. You're a really good interviewer, very good interview. Usually it's the same questions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you asked me several questions that made me think because I'd never been asked them before. So I'm looking forward to that again.
Well, maybe if we can get you back on, we'll have like all listener questions, and we'll see if we can really stump you.
That would be wonderful. Sure.
Awesome. Well, Larry Kenny,
I'll look forward to it.
Yes, we'll put links to all of your stuff on the website, the Facebook account, so you can contact Larry and let him know that you're a fan. Larry, thank you again for coming on.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Evan. Bye bye, everybody.
And before we go, a quick programming note. I actually had the pleasure of being interviewed by Dave Cavassier, who runs a voice acting blog, which you can find at Corvo, CORVO.biz, or his website at Corvo.com. And did a nice little interview with me and talked a little bit about this show and the Fancy Man's Gangsters Network in general. So we'll, that there will also be a link to that in the show notes to this show, as well as on our all of our social networks. So thank you guys for listening. This has been The Voice Behind, a production of the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode, and for outtakes from this and other episodes, as well as news and commentary from the voice actor community, follow our Twitter feed at twitter.com/thevoicebehind or on Facebook at facebook.com/thevoicebehind. Comments, questions, and suggestions are more than welcome at voice@fancypantsgangsters.com. Thanks so much for listening.